to the New World. Episode 18, The Inca Braveheart. In the last episode, we saw Francisco Pizarro capture the city of Cuzco and destroy his Inca opposition with the help of Diego de Almagro and a puppet Sapa Inca named Manco. But as they began their rule over Peru, divisions formed among their ranks. Almagro feuded with Pizarro over who would rule where, and left to begin his conquest of Chile. Manco, meanwhile, became increasingly abused by the cruel Pizarro brothers, and was eventually convinced to escape and do what he admitted should have been done from the beginning, declaring all-out war against the Spanish in Peru. Back in Cuzco, Hernando Pizarro realized that he had made a huge mistake. He had attempted to treat Manco Inca with leniency, but it was too little too late. Manco had used his trust to escape, and now he was assembling troops to cast all the Spanish out of Cuzco. 70 horsemen under Juan Pizarro raced out to recapture Manco and make him regret ever leaving Cuzco. But as they reached the city of Calca, only 15 miles away, they realized, to their horror, that tens of thousands of Inca soldiers had already been assembled, eager for a fight. The conquistadors fought their way through the mass of men, but when they reached Calca, they found that Manco was already gone, and that the Inca army was beginning to surround them, hurling insults and engaging with their sentries for days. But despite outnumbering the Spanish easily, the Incas did not attack, and Juan soon learned why from a desperate messenger. As they galloped back to Cuzco, they discovered another even larger army already laying siege to the city. Thomas and Macquarie both claimed this was up to 100,000 men, as opposed to only 196 Spanish men, with their African slaves and about 500 native allies who did not side with Manco. If it surprises you that Peruvians would not side with the Incas and the Spanish instead, remember that the Inca Empire was not made up of one single unified culture. Several Inca nobles had outright refused Manco's call to meet him in Calca, and several others would side with the Spanish outright. Manco's generals pushed him to attack straight away, but Manco chose to more slowly encircle the city. They occupied the fortress of Sacsahuaman and cut off the city's water supply from the aqueduct. Hernando Pizarro led the defense and organized his men into groups of cavalry. They attempted to counterattack and break open a path to escape, but this ended in failure and the death of more Spaniards. Every time they attempted escape, they were met with walls of spears and hails of stones. On May 6th, 1536, the time came for the assault. Manco gave the order, trumpets sounded, and the Inca army marched in. Almost immediately, the Spanish were reduced to holding only the main square of the city. The Incas used pits of stakes and entangling wires known as ailus to tie down the legs of horses so they could rush in for the kill. The thatched roofs of Cuzco began to burn, though the Spaniards' slaves kept their section of the city extinguished. Though the tight streets of the city center limited the Incas' numerical superiority, the position of the Spanish became increasingly indefensible. Juan Pizarro decided to lead a counterattack before things got even worse. He led a detachment to retake the fortress of Sacsahuaman from Viyak Umu, the high priest. The fortress overlooked the whole city, so it was a key strategic location. Juan led several assaults across several days, but in the middle of the fight, he took a well-aimed stone to the head and died. Both sides funneled more and more reinforcements to the fortress, and the Incas literally fought for every inch until they had run out of stones, arrows, and water. But the Spanish were excellent melee combatants, and after great efforts, including a daring night attack, they captured the fortress from the Incas. The fighting in Cuzco continued on, frustratingly and bloodily for both sides. From Lima, Francisco Pizarro sent several relief forces up the mountain highway to relieve them, but General Quizo was lurking in the mountains, waiting for them. Quizo had learned how to defeat the Spanish horsemen by forcing them into canyons and causing rock slides that killed numerous men, while the Incas marched forward and seized the rest. He would annihilate entire forces, leaving only a few survivors. Back in Cuzco, Francisco's brother Hernando made another bold attempt to lead out a force and capture Manco, hoping the siege would end there. But the Sapa Inca was prepared for this, too. He redirected a river and flooded the valley the Spanish were moving through, personally commanding a counterattack from atop a Spanish horse. Soon, almost a third of Pizarro's entire force was dead from the rebellion. The conquistador governor needed help and sent numerous letters begging for assistance from governors across the Spanish Americas. Manco seemed well on his way to victory. Now feeling very confident, and rightfully so, Manco decided to send General Quizo the order to begin his attack on Lima, Pizarro's real European capital in Peru. Up until now, Quizo had been running roughshod all over the Spaniards in the steep mountains, but Lima was different. It was down on the coast, where the terrain was much flatter, and horses could sprint around unimpeded. Quizo knew how to use the terrain of the Andes against the Spanish, but that terrain was no longer in his favor. Quizo attempted to overrun Lima as soon as he arrived with a three-prong assault, using his numerical advantage. But this attack stalled thanks to a stalwart defense and desperate countercharges by Spanish horsemen. A longer siege was begun, but Quizo realized he would lose far too many men if Pizarro was allowed to keep counterattacking. After all, a conquistador on a horse could literally run circles around the Incas, and they had no real way to prevent it down here on the coast. One massive assault was required to seize victory, and it needed his personal leadership. He said this to his men. "I intend to enter the town today and kill all the Spaniards who were in it. Those who accompany me must go with the understanding that if I die, we all die, and if I flee, all will flee." Well, it turns out Quizo was right about that last part. When he and his men charged in, the Spanish ran out on their horses in the flat terrain. They spotted him almost immediately and singled him out. When Quizo was killed, the demoralized Incas fled just as he had predicted, and the siege of Lima was over. Manco had lost his best general. Lima remained in Spanish hands, and those in Cuzco were still holding on. The Sapa Inca continued the siege of Cuzco for 4 more months in an attempt to simply starve out those who remained in the city. But the fortunes of the Incas were about to turn even worse. You see, Pizarro not only sent letters begging for help from the rest of the American governors, but he also sent one to his rival, Diego de Almagro. And now the 60-year-old conquistador was here to rescue his fellow Christians in their hour of need. In a way, the news of Manco's rebellion was just about the best that Almagro could have ever received. The invasion of his newly bestowed territory in Chile, which they called New Toledo, was more or less a disaster. Not only had the conquistadors suffered from the hostile environment and starvation, but their would-be Inca auxiliaries had mostly abandoned them after enduring their cruelty. The native people, known as the Araucanians, had apparently defeated them in several battles and killed at least 100 of their number. All this, and the riches that the Spanish assumed lay in the south, were nowhere to be found. The only advantage Almagro really still had was the presence of Manco's half-brother, Paulu, along with the expedition. As a side note, Manco seemed like he had like a million brothers. I mean, we have Atahualpa and Huascar, and now this Paulu guy? Paulu worked as a guide, a translator, and a legitimizer in the eyes of the Inca subjects they encountered. But now, in the midst of his misery, Almagro learned that the Inca to the north were in revolt, and that Cuzco, the city he still thought of as under his rightful jurisdiction, was being besieged. In February of 1537, he returned to the grassy plateau near the capital. But rather than immediately attack, he sent Manco a letter. Almagro explained that he had heard about all of the wrongdoing done to Manco at the hands of the Pizarro brothers, and he believed that Manco was justified in his revolt. He said, "I immediately decided to come with 1,000 Christians and 700 horses, who are with me now, and with letters and powers from the king, my lord, in order to restore all that they took from you, and to punish those responsible for treating you so badly as their crimes demand." Almagro was being quite savvy here, or at least trying to be. By attempting to ally with Mongo rather than eliminating him, he could force out his rival Pizarro and seize all of Peru for himself. Perhaps when Pizarro knew Almagro and the Incas were together, he would give up his governorship. So much for Spanish camaraderie. Of course, Almagro was lying through his teeth, both about the support he enjoyed from Emperor Charles, but also about his supposedly vast numbers of 1,000 men and 700 horses. He hoped that Manco would consider Pizarro as his true enemy, and not Spain in general. But Manco wasn't as gullible as Almagro may have believed. He was unwilling to trade the shackles of Pizarro for the shackles of Almagro. He was no one's puppet, not anymore. When he received this message from a conquistador named Ruy Diaz, he asked Diaz what amount of gold and silver it would take to simply get all the Spanish to leave Peru forever when all this business was done. Diaz answered honestly that there probably would be no such amount, and that the Spanish would remain no matter what, or at least keep trying to come back. Manco would eventually imprison Diaz and decided to remain set on his mission to kill every last Christian in Peru. And that mission was looking increasingly difficult. It had been 9 months since the siege of Cuzco began, and Manco was still unable to take back the city. The Spanish were receiving reinforcements now, not only from Almagro, but also Pizarro was slowly creeping down from the north, now that Quiza was dead. He decided they had no choice but to lift the siege and withdraw to Antisuyu, the eastern part of the Land of Four Parts. He would never return to Cuzco again. You would think this would be a great and happy day for all the Spaniards involved, especially Hernando and Gonzalo Pizarro, who had barely been holding on to the city all this time with less than 200 men. Unfortunately, you would be wrong. The great rivalry between Diego de Almagro and the Pizarro brothers flared right back up the very moment Almagro and his men marched into Cuzco. Rather than pursuing Manco further, Almagro took one look at his half-starved, beleaguered political rivals and decided, carpe diem. On April 18th, 1537, Almagro marched into the city, surrounded the palace Hernando was using as his headquarters, and set it ablaze. The Pizarros and their men, with fire on one side and Almagro's men on the other, opted to surrender to the man they still derisively referred to as the circumcised Moor. Now, this old conquistador from Extremadura, who had once fled to the New World after stabbing a man in Spain, possessed Cuzco, 600 conquistadors, and several thousand native allies of his own, including the newly crowned Sapa Inca, Paulu. With Cuzco now under his thumb, Almagro tried to pursue Manco through the mountains into Antisuyu, but he only found his son Titu Cusi. He also found the remains of over 140 dead conquistadors the Incas kept as trophies, and he rescued the prisoner Ruy Diaz. Almagro almost immediately faced the consequences of his coup de Cuzco. The relief force that Pizarro sent down to the capital, some 500 strong, now approached the city. Its leader was Alonso de Alvarado, who had come all the way down south from Guatemala when he had heard about Manco's rebellion. He was less than happy to learn that Almagro had imprisoned at least 20 Spaniards, including the two Pizarro brothers. But the Spanish were not entirely ready to battle each other just yet, and negotiations began between the two sides that lasted a full year. Working for Alvarado and Pizarro was a lawyer named Gaspar de Espinosa, and for Almagro was Rodrigo Ordóñez, his second in command, who himself had a long and storied career as a soldier. Though Espinosa managed to arrange the release of Hernando Pizarro, little else could be agreed upon. Eventually, the negotiations collapsed, and Ordóñez and Alvarado prepared their armies. A conquistador civil war was underway in the heart of Peru. On April 26, 1538, the two armies met each other outside Cuzco at Los Salinas, in the full sight of the local Incas, who were no doubt wishing something like this had happened years ago. Almagro was struck down with illness, so he entrusted command of his 800 Spaniards to Ordóñez. He himself watched the battle seated on his litter, being carried by Inca peasants like he were a Sapa Inca himself. But the battle did not go well. Orgonez was beheaded in the middle of the fight, and Paulu Inca's native auxiliaries dramatically switched sides to fight for Pizarro. Over 120 of Almagro's conquistadors died, including the recently freed Ruy Diaz. Almagro surrendered in the fort of Sacsahuaman, which Juan Pizarro and the other Spaniards had died taking from the Incas over a year before. Diego de Almagro, the governor of New Toledo and the would-be ruler of all of Peru, would be strangled to death in his cell a few months later. It was a total victory for Francisco Pizarro. Among the conquistadors, he had no clear rival for power, and Peru was all his. Of course, Manco Capac and his Inca noblemen would disagree. By now, he was headquartered in the city of Vilcabamba, 100 miles away and 6,000 feet below Cuzco. Here, among the thick Amazon rainforest on the eastern slopes of the Andes, Mongo sought to continue his war. Though the Spanish were in control of many of the major cities of the country, they still numbered only a few thousand. The countryside was still loyal to Manco, despite his half-brother Paulu wearing the clothes of an emperor. He had spent quite some time licking his wounds, re-establishing contacts among the Inca nobility, and renovating Vilcabamba into a capital befitting a Sapa Inca. It was only after Almagro's death that he felt confident enough to renew the struggle. But Manco was learning from the mistakes of the Siege of Cuzco. Open war was no longer in his favor. Instead, a guerrilla war was necessary. He sent word to his general, Ila Tupac, near the coast, to begin a terror campaign of sorts. Pretty much any Spaniard who used the highway north of Cuzco was attacked. Caravans were raided, encomenderos were slain, and horses were stolen. Pizarro, worried that the Sapa Inca was becoming a nuisance once again, sent out a young captain and 30 conquistadors to track him down. They actually were successful in finding Manco at a local celebration, but in their enthusiastic haste, they blundered into a fight with 80 of Manco's bodyguards. 28 of the 30 conquistadors were killed, more than a few having been hurled off a high cliffside to their deaths. These sorts of small-scale engagements were exactly what Manco wanted. Gathering another army tens of thousands strong would elicit an equal response from Pizarro. And in an equal fight, Manco might lose. And lose hard. But by relying on spies and local knowledge, by traveling light and in small numbers, Manco could keep evading Pizarro and reducing his numbers little by little. Uprisings were ordered by Manco and began in every other quarter of Tawantinsuyu. On April of 1539, Hernando Pizarro had to depart to Spain to explain the death of Almagro to the Council of the Indies. Before he left, he warned his brothers, "Make friends with them and give something to eat to those who wish it, but do not allow even 10 of those who want nothing to gather within 50 leagues from wherever you are, for if you do, they are bound to kill you." When Hernando got to Spain, he would end up spending 20 years in prison for his actions. The remaining Pizarros shifted their tactics as well. If the Inca peasants were in rebellion, then the Inca peasants would be killed. They raided villages, burned houses, and killed local nobles. When the Inca were brave enough to turn out in force and face them, the heavily armored conquistadors would slaughter them. The guerrilla war turned savage. The Spanish apparently made no distinction in who they killed. Rebellious or innocent, man, woman, or child. In the southwest corner of the empire, the high priest Viyak Umu was so ground down by these horrible terror tactics that he was forced to surrender. Soon the Spanish learned that Manco was based out of Vilcabamba and sent 300 men under Gonzalo Pizarro to get him. Paulu Inca, who now took to dressing in fine Spanish silks and hats, volunteered to accompany them, along with another two of Manco's brothers, Huaspar and Inquil. I mean, seriously, it feels like half the Inca Empire was a child of Huayna Capac at this point. I mean, Huascar, Atahualpa, Manco, Paulu, and now Huaspar and Inquil? Who else? Anyway, The Spanish and their Inca puppets went downhill into Antisuyu, a place where few of them had ever been before, no doubt sweating their butts off as they marched down the highway. I mean, this is the Amazon, after all. But Manco's spies knew all about this force, and his army was ready for them. The Inca tricked the conquistadors into crossing a recently built bridge, erected for the explicit purpose of leading them across a river and into a perfect ambush spot. And no sooner had the Spanish crossed than a hail of arrows and stones were set flying. In one battle, about a tenth of the Spanish force was killed. They barely even saw the Incas who attacked them. Gonzalo sent out Huaspar and Inquil to negotiate with their brother Manco, but as it turns out, the Sapa Inca had no love for these two guys. No sooner had they arrived than Manco cut off their heads. "Better I cut off their heads than for them to depart with mine," he said. Now Gonzalo moved forward again. His biggest obstacle was a canyon, blocked off by a massive stone barricade. Now Manco pulled out his next trick, firearms. That's right. After years of being at a firepower disadvantage, the Incas had finally acquired enough arquebuses of their own to use them in battle. However, they did not exactly have the training to use them. Rather than shoving the lead projectile all the way down the barrel, they simply placed the ball at the very end of it. The result was that the bullets, when fired, simply didn't travel very far or hit very hard. A for effort, Incas. Guns or no, it still took days for Gonzalo and his men to find a way to break through the Inca barricade. They managed to climb the sides of the canyon walls and fire down on the helpless Inca defenders, in a moment that reminds me a bit of Thermopylae. Manco himself was apparently present at this battle, taunting the Spanish even as his men fled. At last, in July 1539, Gonzalo reached the city of Vilcabamba, the place where he and his men had struggled to reach. Manco was not there. All they found were more treasures, and his wife, the Inca queen Cura Oclo, who, by the way, is also Manco's sister. That's right, another one of Manco's siblings. Frustrated that all their efforts led to nothing, the Spanish decided to take out their frustrations on the queen. At the explicit orders of the Pizarros, Cura Oclo was assaulted and murdered. Her body floated down on a basket on a river so that her corpse could be found and brought to Manco. Not only that, but those Inca generals who had been captured since the rebellion began, including the priest Villacumu, were burned to death. The capture of Vilcabamba and its aftermath is generally considered the end of Manco's biggest attempt at rebellion. He would return to Vilcabamba after the Spanish left, but he was in poor shape to continue the fight. Yet again, Pizarro was on top of the world. Though his brother Hernando was in jail and Juan was dead, he and Gonzalo, the only remaining brother, were the masters of Peru. 39 years in America had treated them well. With Manco slinking off back to the mountains, the 63-year-old governor set to work back at his pet project, the city of Lima. Apparently, he could be found in the forge, personally helping to cast the bell of its cathedral. Gonzalo Pizarro even felt comfortable enough to launch an expedition to the Amazon, which would turn into a disaster and see more than two-thirds of his men die. But, just as usual, when the Spanish weren't fighting the Incas, they were fighting each other. Though Diego de Almagro was 3 years dead, most of his supporters still remained. For one, they had influenced the courts back in Spain to convict Hernando Pizarro for Almagro's killing. Those who remained in Peru, and there were still many in Peru, still held a real grudge against Pizarro, especially now that he was doing so well. The governor was not particularly forgiving of those who had decided against him, and most of the Almagristas, as they were called, were destitute as a result. One of those was Diego de Almagro the Younger, the 19-year-old son of the man by his native mistress back in Panama. And even in Lima, Pizarro's new city, they lurked and plotted. On June 26, 1541, just after Sunday Mass, More than 20 Almagristas, armed with an assortment of weapons, burst into Pizarro's home and attacked. They found him before he had time to strap on his armor. He was stabbed to death right then and there. As he lay dying, he asked his killers for a priest so he could have a confession. "You can go to hell to make your confession," one of them said, and threw a vase down on his head. And just like that, the governor was dead, a far richer man than he had ever dreamed. Almagro the Younger rode around in the streets of Lima, yelling that he was the new governor of Peru. Apparently he had wanted to be king, too, but in Spanish Peru, governor was just as good. Unfortunately, the Council of the Indies would not settle for Almagro the Younger. They dispatched Cristobal Vaca de Castro, a judge from León in Spain. When he arrived in Lima, many of Almagro the Younger's supporters deserted him in favor of someone with actual legitimacy. Almagro met with Vaca de Castro's forces at the Battle of Chupas in June 1542, but he was defeated. He attempted to hide in Cuzco, but he was captured and beheaded, apparently in the same cell that his father was strangled in 4 years prior. But not all of the Almagristas were dead. Some refused to admit defeat and went to the one place where they might continue the fight against what they saw as a tyrannical government. They went to Vilcabamba. They went to Manco Capoc. Manco received the leader of the Almagristas, Diego Mendez, with some apprehension. After all, this man had been his people's mortal enemy for the past several years. But these Spaniards could prove useful. In return for sheltering them, the conquistadors taught Manco and his men everything they knew on how to fight like a European. They learned how to properly take care of horses, how to wield steel weaponry, and of course, how to properly load and fire an arquebus. Finally got that down. 2 years were spent like this, and a relative calm descended over Peru. As Manco was hesitant to renew the fight, and he was far enough away in the Amazon jungle that to Vaca de Castro, he was out of sight and out of mind. Soon, a new governor arrived in Peru. This man was Don Blasco Núñez Vela. Well, I say governor, but really he's a viceroy, just like the one in Mexico, I mean, New Spain. This was to allow greater royal control over the territory, meaning Spanish law would actually matter, and not just be at the whim of whatever conquistador was the most powerful. Núñez Vela was a ship captain for most of his life, not a career politician. He made a bad first impression before he'd even reached Peru, when he freed a bunch of Inca slaves in Panama. By now, most of the Spaniards in Peru had thought that Gonzalo Pizarro was the natural heir to the throne, so to speak. Encomenderos urged Gonzalo to declare himself king of an independent Peru, as if one didn't exist already in Vilcabamba. Núñez Vela continued to offend when he arrived in Lima, and publicly proclaimed that he wanted to act in the interests of all Peruvians, the implication being that he was going to improve the treatment of the Incas. I mean, the nerve on this guy. He arrested Vaca de Castro for supposedly plotting with Gonzalo, and apparently was interested in bringing Manco back to Cuzco. But in Vilcabamba, Diego Mendez, still under Manco's protection, had a better idea. What's better than a puppet Sapa Inca, he thought. How about a dead one? With Manco gone, his remaining forces would be in disarray, easily conquerable. That would be a good gift to the new viceroy. One day, in 1544, when Manco and his 14-year-old son Titu Cusi dropped by to visit their Spanish guests, Mendez and a few other exiled Spaniards played a friendly game of horseshoes with the Sapa Inca. When Manco went to make a throw, they pulled out knives and stabbed him to death while Titu Cusi watched. Then they got on their horses and fled. But that night, the barn they were sleeping in was set on fire by Inca pursuers. When Mendez and his friends stumbled out coughing, they were hacked to death. Reminds me a bit of the scene of John Wilkes Booth's capture and killing after assassinating Abraham Lincoln. Thus ended the life of Manco Capoc, perhaps the last best hope for Inca independence. He was only 28 years old, and had ruled to Wanton Suyu, such as it was, for 9 of those years. He first trusted the Spanish, but then he risked everything to fight them. He had a pretty good shot at it, but he lost all the same. But how could he have won anyway? Where did he go wrong? Perhaps it was a mistake that he made in the first days of the rebellion, with the death of the General Quizo and the defeat at Lima. Maybe he didn't properly exploit the divisions among the Spanish when Almagro and Pizarro were feuding. Perhaps he never really had a chance at all, and the Spanish would never have given up their greed-fueled quest to bleed the Andes dry of gold and silver. But who knows? I'd like to think that maybe, just maybe, we could have seen an independent, Inca-led Peru survive into the modern day. But a new age of European imperialism is here, and there isn't a square foot of ground on this planet they wouldn't try their best to claim. So the tale of Manco Capac is over, and the Inca Empire is dying with him. But it isn't quite dead yet. Remember, Paulu Inca is still Sapa Inca, and he will remain for a few more years until he dies and is succeeded by his Hispanicized son, Carlos Inca. And then there's Titu Cuzi, Manco's son, who will lead Vilcabamba as an independent Inca state in its own right. And it will survive for the next 28 years until it's finally brought down in 1572. But that's a story for another day. I want to end this four-part story of Peru with the death of Gonzalo Pizarro. You see, Gonzalo was still doggedly determined to oppose the new viceroy Núñez Vela at every turn. Disagreements turned into arguments. Arguments turned into plotting. Gonzalo raised an army of his own, along with many other wealthy encomenderos who still thought they, not some royal appointee, should be the true rulers of Peru. In 1544, they rebelled and faced the viceroy in battle. Gonzalo and his conquistadors were veterans. They knew how to fight and kill their fellow Spaniards. So Núñez Vela was defeated, and he fled far to the north. But Gonzalo pursued him. The viceroy, appointed with the authority of Emperor Charles himself, was executed along with 340 other Spaniards. But Gonzalo's little independent Peru could not last forever. In 1548, Spain sent another, much larger army to reassert control. Gonzalo, the last of the Pizarros, still in Peru, was defeated at the Battle of Jaquijahuana. He surrendered and was executed. For 16 years, the Pizarro brothers ran roughshod over the whole of Peru. They bent the entire empire, the land of four parts together, to their will. But it didn't last forever. Only one man could rule this empire, and as it turned out, that man was Emperor Charles. The viceroyalty of Peru was now firmly established, and though it will face its fair share of troubles, including the Incas still in Vilcabamba, it will not go away until José Antonio de Sucre defeats the viceroy in the Battle of Ayacucho in 1824. In 1911, the American Hiram Bingham would quote-unquote rediscover the old palace of Machu Picchu, which, if you'll remember, was built by Pachacuti all those years ago. And forever after, Machu Picchu would be a great tourist attraction and a look back into the old civilization of the Incas. But he didn't really rediscover it. A few Peruvian farmers led him there. They'd been cultivating crops in that area for years. And I think that's one of the lessons I've learned about the Incas as I've read about them. Americans like me sometimes think of them, just like the Aztecs or Mayans, in our popular conscience, as a lost civilization. Nothing but ruins and rumors of hidden gold stashed away in a lost temple somewhere. But for the people who actually lived, and continue to live, in these places, the old civilizations of Central and South America didn't go anywhere. In many ways, the Incas are still there, high among the peaks of the Andes. We just call them Peruvians now.